coming up, we are going to give our thoughts on the new Incredibles 2 movie, and we will be reviewing it this coming up on Traveling with a Mouse. Welcome, everyone, to episode 123 of Traveling with the Mouse. I am John Martin.
And I'm Adam Brown.
And it is Friday, June the 26th, and we are going to be talking about The Incredibles 2, which we both got to see over the course of this past weekend. Is that correct?
It is. It's actually the 29th. You said 26th, oh. But...
Oh, why did I say the 26th? I have no idea. I had the 26th on the brain. Today is Friday, June the 29th.
Yes. Turn that 6 upside down.
I was like, I don't know where I get the 26th from. Apparently, I'm living in the past.
Yes.
So,
yeah. So, yeah, I saw Incredibles 2 in theaters, yeah.
And I did as well. This is actually the first movie we've taken our 2-year-old daughter to see, ironically.
Yeah. Interesting.
And I say that because of some of the comments that have been made concerning the movie from parents. So it just incidentally worked out that way.
Okay. So, yeah, we'll get into all that.
Yeah.
So yeah, I guess we'll do spoiler free for a few minutes and then we'll get into spoilers. I guess that's how most people do these kind of things. So in case you haven't seen the movie, we won't ruin anything right away, but we'll kind of give some general thoughts and then we'll go into spoilers.
That makes sense. So general. I thought it was a good overall film.
Yeah.
I was a little bit surprised at some of the avenues they took during it. There were some moments that I'll say, if you're considering taking particularly younger children there, that could be even a little too intense, depending on the age,
mm-hmm.
which was kind of surprising for a Disney Pixar movie.
Yeah.
Some of the choices they made in dialogue, even in some cases, yes. was a little bit surprising.
I would agree with that.
So there's that. And as you may or may not have heard by now, without once again giving too much away, there is a scene in there that if you have epilepsy or are prone to seizures, or if it even just bothers your eyes, even because I actually could see where that would just become annoying in this one particular scene. Just to be warned, because I didn't see a warning at my theater that I went to, actually, unless it was on the ticket. So I thought they were starting to do that now. Yeah. Maybe they hadn't rolled it out at the time.
Right.
But I thought they were starting to do that, and I didn't see one. But
yeah,
just forewarn you, there is a part in which you're probably going to want to turn away or something if you are prone to seizures.
Yeah. Well, yeah, so. Definitely not. I had read about this before I saw the movie, so I kind of knew, and kind of in the movie you can kind of tell when it's coming. I mean, there's a couple of scenes where it kind of is a little strobe lighty, so I kind of was ready for it. But if you didn't know that, just that is something to be aware of for sure. And my theater did not have any warning whatsoever, which, you know, it wasn't a big deal to me, but of course, if I had a family member or me that was prone to something like this, I would be very concerned, so.
Yeah, and I was thinking, like, how intense or how...
extreme?
How obvious. How extreme, maybe. Extreme is a good one. Could this scene really be, I'm thinking, when it has a strobe effect? But then when you actually see it, you're like, wow.
It is a little, yeah.
I can understand what people were saying.
Yeah, it was a little intense.
Concerning this. Yeah, I don't think I've seen anything quite like that in any movie. I actually was beginning to wonder if maybe they weren't trying to really hypnotize me, much like in the scene. So, yeah. Or something similar in the scene. So,
but I was happy overall with all the characters. Got enough screen time for me. I thought they did a good job of spreading out each character with different powers, and they got to do kind of their own little thing. And I don't think this is spoiling anything by saying Baby Jack-Jack is kind of my favorite. I thought it was nice to see more of him and enjoying the scenes he was in. Overall, I enjoyed that. I thought it was really well done, and you get to see a good amount of Frozone. I thought that was cool because he's a cool character. So,
well, I think character-wise, they kind of shifted the spotlight a little bit without really taking it totally off the. I mean, because even though I know the movie's called The Incredibles, it kind of, the way they did the first one in particular, kind of centered around Mr. Incredible.
Right.
He's still a big part in this film, but they kind of explored the other characters of the movies a little more without, you know, like I said, taking him out of his role.
Right.
So exactly, I think that was a good job.
Yeah. I enjoyed the storyline. I enjoyed it. So should we get into any spoilers now? Should we give that warning? I don't really have anything non-spoiler else to say.
Yeah, I mean, as far as what we have to say, it's kind of hard not to say something without spoiling it. So I think we've probably gone about as far as we can go in that avenue.
Yeah.
The only thing I would say still that applies non-spoiler wise is I would just, it is PG, not G. Just remember that.
There are some parents' words that I wasn't expecting.
There are some things you're probably going to need to guide as far as your kids go. I mean, I get it. It's a Disney movie. It's not the first time they've gone this avenue. It's the first time that I can think of in a long time in which you've really had to use the parental guidance of the PG part.
Yes.
But
I was caught off guard by it because, you know, my son's 4 and a half, well, almost 5, but he's of that age where, you know, words, anything he hears, he's going to repeat. And so I'm like, okay, this is a movie I was taking him to, not expecting to hear certain words I didn't want him to be saying all the time. And it's not like they were horrendous words, but it's still like, you know, I'm not ready for him to be saying these kind of words right now.
Well, I got to be honest, you know, the original Toy Story, for instance, was the original one, it was also PG, not G, I think?
It could have been,
was it G?
That's a good question.
They kind of flirted with language that most parents want their younger kids to use, is what I'm trying to say. Or some of the way they talked about things. I would say even going as far as like when I thought it was pretty funny when he kind of snuck in calling him Mr. Lightbeer.
That's true, yeah. Lightbeer. Yeah. But I mean, in Incredibles 2, we're talking about things much worse than that. It says it's rated G, by the way. So
the original Toy Story? I think the original was. But one of the other ones was rated PG, I think.
It's probably Toy Story 3.
Yeah. Anyway, but moving along.
Yes. Spoilers.
We're going to move into this is the spoiler version now that we've pretty much covered all you can cover.
Yes.
That don't involve spoilers, so you cannot say you were not warned.
Yes.
And in fact, we will take this short pause and play the opening segments of the Incredibles theme in order for you to move. Anyway.
Spoilers.
So, starting off, in the theaters, there's kind of a rather unusual short, we'll say, prior to the film.
Yes.
That I can't even remember the name of it now. Do you remember the name of it? It's something that keeps your attention because it's kind of unique, but it has a message in it.
Bayo is what it was called. Looks like Scott Bayo. Bayo.
Oh yeah.
I actually thought it was really sweet. I mean, the part where she eats him is kind of weird, but it was a dream, so I kind of get that now. But it was sweet. I thought it was really cute. And, you know, it's like the typical Pixar thing where you're going to cry. Because it's like, I mean, I didn't really tear up at this one so much, but I can understand.
Yeah, I was going to say, I was like, there might be somebody out there who does. But
my mom would, for sure.
Well, my wife and I were just kind of looking at each other, scratching our heads a little bit when it was first said and done, trying to figure out exactly why they went that route. But
it was cute. I thought it was original and cute.
It didn't say it wasn't creative or anything like that. It was just odd.
It will probably win an Oscar for best short film.
Do they even have one of those?
They do. Yeah, it's the best animated short. They do have that category. One of them won recently. That was either Disney or Pixar. I think it was
one. I'm gonna say, was it the Olaf movie?
No, it wasn't. No, it wasn't. We're getting off track. So,
anyway, back to the topic at hand.
Yes.
And Incredibles 2, at the beginning of the film, it was a little bit, I guess that opening scene was a little bit intense, which is why I say younger kids in particular, you might want to, they might actually get scared, I should say, from that opening with as loud as it is and a lot of the stuff going on. What's the name of that? What's the name of that character that was drilling underground?
Yeah, the Underminer.
The Underminer, that's right. I knew it had to be something clever with it. In this particular movie, it's the Ratzenberger effect is what we'll call it, because that's who he voiced
right.
in this film. I kind of felt like a little bit throughout this film, they kind of played the whole, it was like kind of poking a little bit at politics, but not enough where it was obvious, like they could draw it up back maybe.
Yeah.
It might just be my mind. It might just be what I was reading into it.
But. No, I think they do that a lot, actually. I think they try to be as subtle as they can about it, but...
Yeah.
Going with characters who are in a very different situation, but similar circumstances as far as political...
And I'm trying now to remember this, some of these things in order. You might do better than I do, but I remember in the opening scene, when they had that... rescued and everything, they pretty much did too much damage.
Yeah.
What's funny is they actually address something that's kind of like real life, like they went through all this to not capture someone who robbed a bank, essentially.
Right.
And they talk about insurance and things like that and all the damage they did in the process.
In a way, it's kind of poking fun at a lot of superhero films that, you know, all this damage done, you know, like a Batman film or Superman, especially all this damage that happens. Like if you just didn't do anything, it would have been better off than trying to capture him.
Pretty much.
It's kind of funny.
Been a lot less destructive and cost a lot less. Probably cost more money than the guy got away with is what they were trying to get at.
Exactly.
But anyway, you know, I knew I recognized some of the voices in here, and the one that plays, I can't even remember the names of the characters now. The guy that's kind of like on the superhero side, the one that ends up interrogating the young boy and wiping his memory. You know, his voice I recognize there, but you know, I know it's Mike from, I'm trying to think of his real name now, but he played Mike in the Breaking Bad series and the Better Call Saul series. Jonathan Banks, I think, is his name.
Yes, Dicker.
So,
that's all I remember.
He had a very distinctive voice, and I couldn't place it then. And whenever I saw who it was later, I was like, "Oh yeah, I can't believe I didn't place that." But I did manage to place Saul.
Because it really looked like Bob Odenkirk, like him.
Yeah, it even did. But I thought it was still pretty funny. I was like, "What is this? Like Breaking Bad meets Pixar?"
Yeah, kind
pretty
of.
Much what's happening
Which is
here.
Interesting because they did a lot of Breaking Bad callbacks in Zootopia, which I thought was interesting. So they must have a lot of fans of Breaking Bad at Disney and Pixar.
Somebody in the Pixar section loves Breaking Bad. That's all I can say.
Yeah.
Somebody does. And it's probably not Lasseter because he was not involved in this project.
Yeah.
His name's not on it anywhere anyway.
But yeah, maybe they took his name off of it. I don't know. Because he had to be involved at some point, you would think, but maybe not.
I don't think he had to be.
I mean, this probably was in development before all this stuff happened. It had to be. But, I mean, maybe they just took his name off of it.
I mean, because the bulk of the work had to be done during the 6 months, though, that he was gone, so.
Yeah. But anyway, all the originals are back. Craig T. Nelson, Holly Hunter, Samuel L. Jackson.
When I was watching, I was like, Craig T. Nelson, he's got to be like 100 by now or something, doesn't he? I mean,
when they showed him before, like there was a little clip before the movie started that showed like Samuel Jackson, Holly Hunter, and Craig T. Nelson.
Yeah.
He looked, you know, he didn't look horrible for his age. But
I know. But I mean, he aged the most out of anybody
cast. But his voice stayed pretty strong. I mean, his voice didn't change that much. I enjoyed hearing everybody's voice. It's like they just picked up where they left off. So,
you know, one of the things I kind of enjoyed a little bit about this movie was how they took Like, they had a scene where they had a monorail that got derailed that was an older one.
Yes.
And then it's just a little bit later when they bring Mrs. Incredible into the picture, as they want her to be the face, you know, of the superheroes of this time, how they're introducing a new train. I was thinking, are they like foreshadowing
Disney Mon?
Disney World? Yeah, is Disney World like the actual use of new trains?
Right.
And if so, how much of the foreshadowing are they putting in there? Because something also happens to the new train. So
right.
I wonder if they're
thought to that. I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe. So. Maybe it's a subtle poke at Disney to do something. No, probably not.
I like that we got to see a little more action out of Frozone, the beginning and the end, particularly, of the film. I thought that was really cool.
I enjoyed that,
I've always enjoyed his ice cream on the Disney ships.
Oh, I was like, what? Okay. Frozone.
That's what they call the ice cream station. Frozone.
Gotcha. All right. That's cool.
Anyway.
Frozone snow cones? That's what it should be.
You're like, what?
So you enjoyed his snow cones? Or what did you say, ice cream?
Yeah, I've enjoyed his ice cream stations on the Disney
cruise
ships. That's what
I gotcha. So I guess we should say the superheroes are fighting for their rights to be legal, because superheroes are outlawed. And that's the whole point of having Elastigirl be kind of the one that goes out and does superhero stuff to try and win their rights back in a way.
I kind of questioned a little bit whether they weren't flirting with a parallel between superheroes being illegals and actual, like, immigrants. You know?
I mean, I think
I kind of wondered if they were doing that a little bit.
They were.
But again, it was more subtle, which is why I say I wonder.
Yeah, so. I mean, some people will take from it what they mean out of it, and some people will just gloss over it. I mean, that's how they do with most of these films. They have a message underneath that if you really study it, you'll kind of understand it. If not, you know, you can enjoy it for the action or whatever. I mean, so they can package a movie like this with a message, but you don't always have to take it for that, because there's other stuff that you can focus on. So I like the way they do that, to be honest.
Well, I want them to be careful, just because I don't want to, you know, go and watch a film and be like, oh, someone's preaching to me again about something, you know? Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think WALL-E was pretty obvious that it was preaching to you about environmentalism and stuff like that.
Yeah, but it was, I don't know, to me, I don't think it was like straight. I mean, I get that that's what the subject matter is about, but I enjoyed WALL-E, and it's not, you know, right. it didn't throw global warming in your face. It was just saying, take care of the planet.
Well, I mean,
And it was,
you take you take out of it what you see in it, but I think if you were a hardcore environmentalist, you would really be like, yeah, this movie's fantastic, because it really hits hard on all these subjects. Whereas if you're more casual about it, you're like, oh, it was a pretty movie and they did a lot of cool stuff, and yeah, maybe I should, you know, recycle or something.
Or I think the bigger message in that movie is the dangers of relying on technology, because if we do, even our bones will become fat.
That too. No, I mean, I like that there's something deeper than just this is a funny action movie. I kind of like that there's more thought that goes into it. There's clearly a lot of thought that goes into these movies, so I appreciate the artistic value of that, I think.
Now, there is moments in here in which I didn't catch it at first. You actually had to point it out to me that it was in there. I guess I must have missed it. I must be desensitized to this thing, that there was actually two swear words, as it's called. It's kind of a difficult thing for me to say, well, I'm outraged about it. And here's the reason why I say this.
Yeah.
You know, somewhere down the line, someone who considered themselves the moral majority came up with this list of words that are do's and don'ts.
Good point.
And, you know, society has just gone along with it and adopted it and, you know, are shocked when you use it and all this other good stuff. And I really don't get it, because it doesn't come and let's be honest, I know it doesn't come from anything biblical or anything else like that. I mean, I don't know where the origins of these words were and who decided that they were off limits.
That's true.
That's why I say it's difficult for me to say something about this. But given that, I do know how it's viewed in society, and I do have to be careful with my kids, in particularly, about using them.
Right. It's more about how other people would react to you if your kids start saying stuff like this at 2 or 3 or 4 years old. I mean, that's really what it is, more so than the actual word and what it means. Because most kids, when they say stuff, they don't really know what it means anyway. But that being said, you know, I was a little surprised that this kind of language was in there. I don't really care overall because my son glossed over it, didn't pay attention to it. But that doesn't mean that, you know, other kids don't start saying this word. And overall, I mean, these words today don't really hold the weight that they did 10 years ago or 15 years ago when I was a kid. I mean, it was a lot different then. I remember when Ants came out and Bug's Life came out at the same time, Ants had several swear words in it, and Ants was beat down in the media for using foul language, and this is supposed to be a kid's movie, and blah, 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 whereas Bug's Life was, and that's really one of the reasons why Bug's Life did better than Ants, and, you know, there's a whole backstory to that, but anyway, it was different, and now, you know, it's today's age, it doesn't really, these words aren't really that big of a deal anymore.
Yeah, I still could see where the parents in general though would have a problem, because I would say, you know, it's just unnecessary if you're going to gear it towards kids. Now I do say Incredibles 2 was rated PG, not G.
Right. Yeah, you have to pay attention to that if you're a parent.
So I will say that, but it is done in the style that Disney has been consistent with and Pixar has been consistent with of doing kid-friendly films. Okay?
Yeah.
So, and I think they tried to make this one a little bit older of an appeal. Not just the language choices. Like I said, some of the choices in the action sequences even was more geared to a slightly older audience.
Yeah. So I think maybe I should pay more attention to that in the future and say, okay, maybe my 4-year-old shouldn't see this, or, you know, when my younger son, you know, maybe it's a thing where I take the older one but not the younger one. And
I think about when this gets released on digital and DVD and what have you, after it's done its run in the theaters, I think there's probably going to be more people that are privy to it and things like that. So, you know, whenever you are entertaining your kids, you know, like they will latch onto something and want to watch it repeatedly over and over again. What do you say to this movie? Because if you let them young enough just watch it over and over again, they're going to start repeating it.
They're going to start repeating
it. So how do you handle it? You know,
that's a good question.
Disney really walked a fine line with that one, really.
Yeah.
Now, it's not the first time they involved swearing in cartoons. I remember very distinctly late 80s. Who Framed Roger Rabbit, which was Touchstone Pictures, but was owned by Disney at the time.
Right.
And was definitely a Disney product because they ended up
all over using it. MGM Studios.
Yeah, they used it all over the studios, and he was even integrated in their 20th anniversary, you know?
Yeah.
And it had several in it, some of them just in the opening sequence with Baby Herman. Now, we're not talking about intense, what's been considered the worst words. We're talking, you know, the, I guess, what would we call them? Level 1 swear words.
Yes. That's
being used in the movie. Which is kind of the same way used also in Incredibles 2. So.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
And it was just twice.
I thought it was interesting, too. It was the one character who turns out to be the villain who said those.
Yeah.
So I almost thought it was a foreshadowing almost in a weird way. That only villains use bad words.
Maybe that's
I just thought it was an interesting choice. Maybe I'm wrong. Yeah. I can't remember her name, but the sister of
Saul. I've had a lot of trouble with that. We probably should have pulled something up as far as the list of characters in this one. Since we did just watch it the one time, it was just recently.
Yeah.
So far. But I think, you know, the stuff we're bringing up, though, makes sense.
And as we're sort of still in this vein of talking about things that might be a little weird for kids, I thought the character who was named, what was his name? Reflux or something like that. Acid reflux or reflux guy, whatever it was. The old guy that just kept, he would vomit up like lava, I guess, was his special power.
Right.
So it was kind of a little odd to see, too. I think, you know, that kind of thing might be a little weird, but I thought it was funny. I think that was more for the adults than the kids, but
yeah. And there are things they throw in there that are I don't think adult humor is the right one, but adults will understand that kids won't.
Especially so the stuff with Jack-Jack, because as a dad of a 9-month-old, it's kind of in that same. He's doing a lot of the same things Jack-Jack does, except of course for turning into like demon baby or multiplying or, you know, all this stuff. The baby stuff was really cute, and it was probably my favorite part because I'm kind of living that right now, and I thought that was very true to life.
They had several of the things with baby Jack-Jack was very funny. I know when I was watching it, the one that definitely got the kids going in the theater was when he starts fighting the raccoon.
Yes. That was a really funny scene.
That was a good scene.
Yes.
Jack-Jack, so that really awesome. That really got the kids in the theater going, and the one I was watching. So,
yes, that whole scene was really funny. I thought he was going to like kill the raccoon. I was really expecting that, thinking like he's going to kill this dang raccoon.
But yeah, didn't. Really. I was like, they're going to have a death in this.
That's what I thought.
The way things were going, I thought he was going to sear him with his laser eyes.
Yeah.
Catherine Keener is the one that I'm thinking of. That's Evelyn is her name.
Okay, she's the
main villain.
Right.
So, by the way, I thought this name was really cheesy, but the screen slaver, I mean, come on.
I mean, Underminer isn't.
Yeah, I was going to say it's just as cheesy as Underminer, I guess, so we'll just go with that. I think it's done on purpose, perhaps.
Of course, yeah. I think, I mean, the movie, isn't it set in, like, the 50s, 60s time frame, so it kind of calls back to all these really cheesy superhero type things from that era. So I guess that's kind of the point, is all these really silly villain and hero names are really kind of supposed to be tongue-in-cheek stuff.
Yeah.
I liked it, though. I thought it was funny.
One of the things they brought out in this movie, too, which I kind of enjoyed them addressing this sort of thing, is like the role in the family that the man and the woman have, uh-huh, and how it can be the same but can also be reversed at the same time, I guess. Work out just fine.
Yeah, I thought that was good.
And like, for instance, there are plenty of families in which both parents have to work, obviously.
Yeah.
But there are some in which, you know, the man actually is the one that takes care of the family instead of being the breadwinner, which, if it works, like whichever situation works in your family,
whatever works,
then if that's what works best, then that's what works best. I don't think it really matters. I think we're living in an age where, like, the whole, you know, man has to be the one that brings in the most money is kind of a thing of the past, really. I think when you're working together and you're truly a team, I don't think it matters which one's pulling what weight as long as you're both working toward the same goal. You know what I mean?
Right, yeah.
And why does it matter? So,
yeah.
Which is the way it should be.
Exactly, yeah. And I think that was an interesting point in the movie, because it's supposed to be set back in a time where this wasn't the norm. And so Mr. Incredible is kind of conflicted with that, but he wants to be a superhero and be legal, so he goes along with it, and he kind of learns taking care of the kids is not exactly the easiest thing in the world either. So it's kind of cool.
And it was eating him alive to see Elastigirl get the headlines.
Exactly, yeah.
So clearly was that.
But he was willing to do it for, it was really for selfish reasons, but he was willing to go along with it, and
Oh, and I can totally, and I'm sure you can too, I can totally relate to the whole thing about finally getting to sleep for like 17 hours straight or something like that. Yes. After having a baby or
having a break from
around the 24/7.
Yes. Yes. Which reminds me, we should talk about Edna Mode scene, which I was glad. I was wondering when she was going to show up because it took a long time before.
Yeah, she didn't have as big a role in this one for some reason.
Yeah, but her scene was funny as heck. I loved her part in it, even though it was very small compared to the last movie. It was great. I loved seeing her. So she's a great character.
The only thing I can think is maybe Brad Bird is a lot busier than he was now than he was when he first did The Incredibles, because he actually voices.
Yeah,
he's the director, Edna. But he also voices Edna Mode. So yeah. I'm just thinking, like, maybe he's a much busier person now than he was when he first did that movie. So that's all I can think of, because he did go on to do things other than Incredibles. Ratatouille, for instance, was his project. So
right.
You know, he's done other Disney films since that time. I just think he had a little more time on his hands in the first Incredibles movie.
It was a scene stealer, so yeah, that part was really good. And again, Jack Jack too, putting the two of them together was brilliant, because they're the standout characters of this film as far as like scene stealing. They had the funniest moments.
Oh yeah. Let's see. Talking about the film itself, I'm going over in my head trying to think of the parts. I think we've covered kind of the major stuff of the film.
I thought I guess you'd say the climax of the film, or the big sort of ending, was well done too, with the big yacht or whatever that big boat was. All these world leaders were supposed to be signing. It was very much like an old superhero movie plot, where all these world leaders are going to be on the same thing, doing some big thing, and, you know, of course, that would never happen in real life. But it's just kind of an interesting way they did that. And I liked how Dash and Violet, I liked their parts towards the end, of course, with the car and where they get on the boat and Jack-Jack and all that stuff. It was, the kids had their moment. It's kind of cool to see the whole family do their powers together. So you got that moment towards the end too. So, and the kids ended up saving the parents there, which I thought was cool.
Yeah, all kind of different. Breaking the mold of the typical, what a typical hero film to superhero film would do.
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
They all played their part. They did it as a family.
Yeah, which is refreshing.
They all had a big part to play in the overall ending of it, including their friend in Frozone.
Frozone, yeah.
So.
Yeah, I liked it.
It was kind of funny right there at the end, whenever they had to call Frozone into action, and you could hear his wife in the background say something about where he was going or something like that. Did you remember seeing that part?
That was funny.
Ask about where he's going.
Right. Because that was funny from the first one. I remember it was kind of a callback to that. It was kind of funny.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, I don't remember a whole lot about the first one. I'm going to have to watch that again. It's been a minute for me.
I will say the end credits, it's not worth sticking around for, because we did wait around just to see if there was a scene at the end, and all you see is like the little underminer, little drill thing go across the screen. That's all we saw, so it's not worth sticking around for. There's no like ending scene, which a lot of, you know, Disney movies have done that, where at the end of the credits they'll do an extra scene now that you only see at the very end of the credits the little drill go by, and it's really, is that really a hint at another sequel in 14 more years? I don't know. I mean, are they going to go back after Underminer again? I don't know.
It's hard to believe that that's how long it's been, though, since the first Incredibles movie.
Yeah.
One thing we did kind of skip around and not talk about when we jumped to the boat, though, was the scene that we talked about earlier that could induce epilepsy, potentially.
Guess we should have mentioned that.
Yeah. It's when, what should I say, they kind of set someone up to be captured as the screen slaver.
Right.
But it's not really screenslaver.
Exactly.
I got to be honest. Earlier in the film, I called it wrong because I honestly thought the way things were going that Bob Odenkirk's character, Winston Dever, was going to be the screenslaver.
I actually thought that too because he was way over enthusiastic about everything, and that's what made me think it was the opposite. But yeah.
But then, you know, whenever it wasn't, I was like, you know, that's perfect because, you know, he never has played a character that's quite that. He's always played a gray character.
Exactly, yeah. I was thinking
and that's
that
not
too.
Gray.
Yeah.
So, it doesn't fit. I thought it was even funny. I even called to a scene where they had them, a scene where he was sitting in a chair, propping his feet on a desk with his Bluetooth. And I was thinking, it's like, look, it's Saul. It's pretty much exactly what he does.
They threw that in there, obviously, for the adults, I'm sure.
Yeah. I really feel like they did. The fans of Breaking Bad would notice it.
Yeah.
Just the whole scene felt like something out of there. Yeah. Or Better Call Saul, one of the two.
Right, right.
But see, what I was saying about that scene, though, is that when they set up the pizza delivery guy and he's obviously under the spell because he's running away, but they do have that one scene where I was really surprised that it was intense as it was. Whenever they said there was going to be a strobe effect, I thought it was going to be something. That wasn't what I was expecting. Because there is a little point right there with the way they're doing the flashing. It actually does get a little bit annoying.
It was kind of annoying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Isn't as intense as they made it during that one scene, especially on a big screen. I wonder how that'll translate when it gets to DVD and video.
That's a good point. I don't know. Yeah, if you're watching it in the dark, it'll probably be bad. Don't watch it in the dark.
Yeah, it might be a good idea. But like, I wasn't sure exactly what the scene was going to be, and then as soon as they hit, I was like, well, that's got to be it, the scene that we're talking about.
Yeah, I had to turn away a little bit because it was bright. I mean, I checked to make sure my son was fine.
Well, when that scene came up, Maddie was asleep, so I didn't have to be concerned with that.
Yeah,
she was asleep through all of but about 20 minutes of the film, pretty much. So, however, when it was all said and done, though, she would be like anyone she met. She would be like, she would first thing she would say is saying that something about baby Jack. And I'm like, oh, we saw Incredibles 2 earlier today.
Right. Well, at least
she would always be saying something about baby Jack.
See a little bit of it. Yeah.
Yeah. Speaking of kids earlier, like we were talking about picking up things in films. Here's an example of something that I really don't want my daughter saying that she actually picked up from Toy Story.
Uh-oh.
It's actually from Toy Story 3. There is a scene when Lotso, like they have him captured right there at the dumpster.
Yeah, okay.
And Lotso is, you know, insulting Big Baby, and then Big Baby does the whole Darth Vader Emperor thing and picks Lotso up and throws him in the trash, you know?
Yeah.
He actually, you know, during that, he actually says the phrase, "Put me down, you idiot." Well, a couple of weeks ago when I had Maddie and she was wanting to get down and I wasn't letting her get down, she actually said, "Put me down, you idiot." So, you know, I couldn't help but laugh
at the same time. Yeah.
A little bit, but I have to also be the parent here and be like, try to let her know that you don't say this.
Yeah, don't say that to your dad.
But or it anybody. Was still funny at the time.
That's funny. Yeah, it's a classic example, though. Kids do repeat everything.
Yes, they pick up things like this.
Yes.
But she's so funny. She's at a stage. She's very adult-like. Mm-hmm. I mean, she's only 2.5.
Yeah.
But she would be, like, her puzzles. And there was one that she was turning it wrong the way, and she got that. And then she just threw it down in the middle. And she was like, "I'm so frustrated." We're talking about a 2.5-year-old. Using the word frustrated in this. I was like, you got to be kidding me.
Right, yeah.
But anyway, it was just funny. It's just funny when I hear this stuff. Because like I said, it's like talking to a little adult in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I noticed we were talking. I don't remember what the word was now. I think it was like rain or something. But, that's because we were talking about going to the pool as long as it doesn't rain. But I said, as long as it doesn't R-A-I-N. You know, because you have to spell words instead of say them, because my 4-year-old knows everything and he listens to everything. So, but I remember saying, as long as it doesn't R-A-I-N, and he's like, "That spells rain." I was like, "Oh, okay, you're starting to be able to spell now. All right, so now how am I going to communicate in code?" You gotta start using
like, we're gonna have to pig Latin
or something. Yeah. it's just kind of funny. Yeah, kids are funny. Anyway, but I think we stopped talking about the movie.
Yeah, just about.
Do you want to talk about the hidden Mickey?
Yes, the hidden Mickey. And I did pick up on that. I was like, well, they're throwing a hidden Mickey in there, which I can only assume that's really what it's supposed to be.
It had to be, right?
Because it was sort of hidden in the sense that it wasn't really drawn out to be Mickey, but it was not like you didn't have to look hard to find it.
Yeah, I mean, it was right in front of your face. If they're trying to do the hypnotizing thing, they didn't have to put the three, you know, so it was obviously a Mickey.
You know, one thing I didn't look for real hard in this one, but I'm sure it's probably there, is you know how, like, Disney in more recent years has had a tendency to throw in this small little ode to a previous or another Disney film in there?
Yeah.
They were still doing it as of recent. The one I can think of, Moana, I remember seeing, like, okay, so for instance, in the Tamatoa scene, whenever Maui first gets his hook back and it doesn't work right and he's shape-shifting through all these things, one of the things he shape-shifts to real quickly is Sven from Frozen.
Yes, right.
So, you know, things like that, those little things, they've been throwing that in Disney films for a number of years, but I didn't notice anything in particular in this one. I feel like it's got to be in there somewhere.
Yeah, I'm sure
it's not. Maybe they got away from it.
Yeah, and a lot of times they throw in, like, the Pixar ball somewhere in there. Yeah. It's in a lot of Pixar films, so I don't remember seeing it, but yeah,
but I'm sure it's in there. But it's probably going to be one of those things that's going to take repeat watches to find.
So. Yes, and probably on DVD or Blu-ray where you can pause it, or digital, and see things.
But overall, I thought it was an enjoyable film. I think it is one of those where you're probably not going to want to let your kids watch it without any interpretation whatsoever, because it's going to take a little bit.
Yeah.
I mean, it's one of those things you're going to need to say, especially if they're old enough, like, you know, these words right here that you just heard, you may have heard them already, but, you know.
Only daddy speaks that way.
You want to just, yeah.
No, I'm just kidding.
It's not something you want to hear thrown around.
No, I agree.
Yeah. So, but overall, still an enjoyable film, another hit for Pixar, I think, and it's going to, as you can see, it's gonna continue that way. So, yeah.
Good film. I liked it.
Another, I don't want to call it, use a cliche, like another home run for Pixar, but it kind of is. So, there we go.
I don't know that this is Oscar worthy, however, but given the competition lately, it probably will still win Best Picture next year or Best Animated Feature.
I don't know. I got to be honest. I really don't care about that sort of thing. Most of the time, the stuff that they pick are things that I never cared for.
Yeah. Well, I guess my point is Coco well-deserved Oscar because it's original. It was very unique, very emotional, very touching, Pixar. This is a sequel. It's a good sequel, but it doesn't, to me, seem like something so original that, you know, that it's Oscar-worthy. Right. But again, like you said, the Oscars, what is that really a barometer for?
Yeah, I can't figure out exactly how they determine what wins, truthfully. Yeah. But anyway, that wraps up this episode of Traveling with a Mouse. As always, you can comment, and you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, all at TWTM Podcasts. We also have a Spreadshirt store in which you can buy your exclusive TWTM merchandise if you wish. That is shop.spreadshirt.com/TWTM podcast. And right now, beginning July the 3rd through the 5th, you can actually use the promo code America and get 20% off your order. So that is America.
Exactly.
Just should be easy to spell.
Yes.
You actually have to spell it that way, not America. But
right, just America. America. Yeah. So there you go. And if you are lost, you can always just go to travelwiththemouse.com for more information there. There's links to everything there. You can also email us podcast@travelwiththemouse.com. And if you would like, you can also support the show by becoming a Patreon, patreon.com/TWTM podcast.
So, I am John Martin.
I'm Adam Brown.
And this has been another episode of Traveling with the Mouse, and we hope to see you on our next trip.